What is going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I'm so excited to share this interview I had with Derek Robertson, co-creator of The Boys, co-creator of Transmetropolitan. I want to let you know up front, we had some Wi-Fi internet connection issues. I've tried to splice it up and make it as clean as I could, so I just want to let you know up front, so bear with us. But I felt it was necessary to still share this interview because Derek shares so much good stuff. We're going to have him back on at some point to talk about some of his new projects. But thanks for bearing with us through the technical difficulties, and hopefully you enjoy this interview with Derek Robertson.
What is going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator Derek Robertson. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Man, I'm so excited. You are prolific in the comic game. You are a co-creator of The Boys, Transmetropolitan, you know, Happy. You've worked on Space Bastards and Batman, you know, Legend of the Dark Knight, Batman Fortress, Constantine. I could go on. Like, I could talk to about all the stuff you've worked on over and over before we even talk. But you have been in the game for a long time, and I'm really excited to talk to you about your work here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks
so
for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. My question I always like to ask guests, have you always had a love for comics, or, you know, did this come in later in life?
Hey, no, it goes way back to my childhood. I've always read, I always remember reading comics in some form or another. I think the earliest memories I have of reading comics that I really attached to was Charles Schulz Peanuts collections. And one of the very first things I ever learned to draw was Snoopy. And I could draw Snoopy well enough that, you know, I mean, as a little kid, that adults would be like, you know, like I was doing a magic trick. Oh, look what he can do. And of course that was, you know, terrible because it put it in my brain at a young age, like, hey, people will pay attention to this. But I also really enjoyed it and it made me happy. And it was a safe place in my head to go is retreating to my artwork in any form. So early on, it was Charles Schulz's Peanuts. And he was a really good person to start with because the storytelling and continuity was so excellent. I didn't know what a good basis that was at that age. I just loved it. But then my sister, older sister, De'Ira, she would read comics like Archie and some of the romance comics that I only know now were actually being drawn by guys like Kirby and, you know, some of the other mainstream guys that we were doing the great superhero stuff would also get assigned these romance comics. But I would read those. I'd read whatever she had because it was secondhand. It was just there in the house. But Bugs Bunny and Archie and those kind of things and Richie Rich. I really liked those comics as a kid. I really enjoyed the imagination of Richie Rich, just how crazy his world was and that he was kind about being wealthy, you know, because it was so realistic. So I like those kind of comics a lot as a little boy. But as I got older, when I got to be like 9, 10, I discovered the superhero comics on my own and started collecting the Flash from DC. It wasn't even a very special issue or an event issue of any kind. It just happened to have a great cover that really stood out to me because the artwork was so solid. And then when I opened it, it was the first time I really saw like how still image could become, could read like it was in motion. And that really just blew my young mind. You never saw, you know, cause Archie and those guys, they didn't have superpowers. So seeing superpowers depicted in a way that I could really feel that the Flash was moving really fast. And, that really woke my mind up. And I was about, it's about 9. So that was really what got me inspired. And by the time I was 10, I was trying to draw my own comic books and I created my own characters and, was stapling paper together and, coming up with my own story. And it was something that I really was excited about and passionate about. So it was like, even as a little boy, I wanted to make my own comics. And I actually did it in a way of like, I didn't know there was a word for it then, but it's called manifesting. But I kind of manifested this reality where I would eventually have a comic book that I created with my name, you know, and it would be real. But I did all the little details, like I did a price box and a logo, and you know, like I really tried to make it look like a legit comic book. It's terrible, but you know, I still have this dream of doing something with that original story. So just not change a word of the dialogue, nothing, just draw it really well, you know. same crappy kid story.
So, well, do you still have the original?
I do, actually. My mom was amazing. She didn't throw anything out. And I came across the original, the very first superhero I ever created out of whole cloth was, I still to this day don't know what he was, but his name was Eagle Eyes. But what was really crazy, this kind of goes back to the manifestation thing. What was really crazy is that I came upon it at a strange period in my life where I realized the very first thing I drew, it was a character and he had some kind of laser beam power coming out of his eyes and he was kind of standing like this. And for me, that was the big breakthrough because I had drawn characters that would just kind of stand straight at the camera all the time. And this was the first time I figured out, oh, hey, if I tuck them, my hand's disappearing in the background. But it's like, if I tuck my hand behind the body, you know, in the drawing, it's like, oh, it's like it implies there's something going on. You know, I'm 9 years old, so
yeah,
cut me some slack. But I figured out, like, hey, if I do this, you know, like I draw like this, it just gave it some dynamism that like other drawings hadn't had. And something kind of clicked in my brain, like, oh, that's how you do it. It's a terrible drawing, of course, but because I was nine. But he's shooting like laser beams out of his eyes. And what's crazy is that over the years, for shits and giggles, I've gone back and revisited that drawing and redrawn it with my acquired skill.
Yeah.
So I drew it in like 2004 when I was working on Wolverine, and then I drew it again a few years later. And then most recently, I drew it when the boys had broken big. And that was fun. It's fun just to put them side by side and see the little evolution.
Yeah.
But what was really crazy is then all the PR came out for the first season of The Boys. And on the side of a building, Brian Michael Bendis sent me a picture from a meeting he was in. And there's Homelander taking up the entire side of a skyscraper on 42nd Street with Homelander. And what's he doing? He's shooting laser beams out of his eyes, just like my very first creation. And I thought that was so weird because, you know, Homelander hadn't even been out there for the world to see yet.
Yeah.
And the first images that the world got of Homelander looked like my Eagle Eyes character shooting laser beams out of his eyes. And it felt like the universe was, I don't know, kind of patting me on the back for my hard work.
Like, well,
like
done.
Your faith is validated, Derek.
That's so good. I love that. That's so neat to hear. Like, I love hearing the origin story, but I also love that you have a mom that collect and that kept your stuff. Cause half the time I'll talk to a creator, I'm like, oh, do you still have one of your original works? Like, no, we threw it away. And my mom is the exact same. Yeah. Like, she hoarded everything that I've ever created. She's like, I don't know if you'll ever need your second grade report card, but I have it for you.
Yeah. My mom was great that way. I lost her back in 2000. So she's been gone a long time, but yeah. She was terrific in that regard. She actually, and drove me crazy at the time, but I'm really grateful that she was one of the, she encouraged me at a young age to be an artist. She had these dreams that I would work for Disney and then was kind of disappointed that I went into comics. Although ironically working at Marvel is now like, would have been like working at Disney, but my father kind of supported my endeavors after that, but she was really great about saying, always sign your work, always put the date on it. And I used to like, Mom, I'm just, you know, I was just farting around drawing on, you know, to keep myself entertained, but she saw something there and she was like, yeah. And I'm really glad because I know exactly the date that I drew my first issue of Nightwing, my stapled together comic, because I wrote the date on it. And when I created Eagle Eyes, because she put the date on it. And I'm like, thanks, Mom. That was really good advice.
Right? Is that partially why you, because I noticed on all like your covers, like you have that box.
That tag.
Yep.
Yeah, it's actually because I came to the realization as I started getting older that like this artwork is like a diary of my life. Like hours and hours of my life have been spent creating these images that people enjoy. And so for me, it's like, I just like to, for my own record and also to chart my own growth, just remember what year it was and what was going on. I change that little tag annually just because it's fun. I like it.
Yeah.
Gives me something to do on New Year's Day. All right, it's time to change up my tag.
You're like, all right, here we go. Let's get into it. You obviously had a love for comics at an early age, a love for art at an early age. Where was this transition to where, you know, whether you thought you know, hey, maybe this is something I wanted to do, where you were like, all right, I'm going to pursue creating comics then.
Yeah, it was funny. I've always been kind of a strange kid in that I was really focused on whatever it is that I wanted to do. And so it was like in fifth or sixth grade, somebody made a comment that I should be a lawyer because I like to argue. And if you follow me on Twitter, you probably notice I'm very opinionated. But and I'm not apologizing for that, because I made it clear my opinions are my own, and right. I got a vent somewhere. But at the same time, like, but they said you should be a lawyer because you really like to argue, and it's true. I love a good debate. I love an honest debate, and I'm really a big believer in trying to keep track of the facts rather than opinions and feelings. Then that's one of the things I loved about being the co-creator of Spider Jerusalem, is because he was half my id as he was half Warren Ellis's. But in that time, I thought, okay, well, being a lawyer or a doctor, those are good jobs. I just assumed that would be something good to work towards, something to aspire to. So when people said, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And so I started reading about it and thinking about it. Took like some kind of course in seventh grade. There was a law class that you elective that you could take in seventh grade at my school. And so I did it, and I did well. But what was funny is that a friend of mine said, oh, that's rich. And I was like, what? He's like, oh, I could just see you trying to defend somebody for, you know, for murder and keep them out of jail. And you'd be drawing Superman on your yellow pad. And I was like, and it was weird because this light bulb went off in my head, and I went, oh my God, Billy, you're absolutely right. And it was strange because it really shook me, because I'm like, he's absolutely right. That is exactly what I would be doing. And so I started to realize at the same time, because I just started collecting comic books, that every comic book had a list of names of people that had worked on them, like on the splash page. And so I started to like, oh, this is the guy that draws it. That's the guy that colors it. And I go, these people are doing this for a job. They must be getting paid. I'm like, I could maybe do that someday. And that was it. And I was in seventh grade. And when I put my head to it, I'm that weirdo kid who's 55 years old and doing it. So I went from that day to here.
So you started at an early age. You knew right off the bat, you're like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do this. Where?
Yeah, I locked down to it early.
Yeah. Where was it where, you know, I know you've worked, like we said, you've worked in comics forever with The Boys and, you know, stuff with Marvel and DC and, you know, Transmetropolitan. Where was it where you kind of felt like you started to get your foot in the door creating comics?
My very first comic book I wrote and drew and illustrated and put together, and it was called Space Beaver. And that came out in 1986. And it was sort of a fluke that was my first comic, in that I was drawing. It's like I did my other comic books at the time. I was still in high school, and I was a terrible student in high school. But only because I focused on drawing so much, I just didn't want to do homework. And I realized I'm a much better learner if my hands are busy. Okay. So, and that's a real thing I'm learning. Like, that's why fidget spinners kicked in at some point. Like, some people just have to have their hands occupied to concentrate. I'm like that with drawing. If I'm like drawing a picture of something, I can actually focus on what's being said better. But if I'm here trying to let somebody talk, I'll just daydream. And that daydream, I will have lost the thread almost immediately. So, but that was very hard to convince others of, you know, when I was a high school student. But I ended up having to take summer school as a result of getting through history with a passing grade. And I did want to graduate high school, and I did. But I decided, but while I was in summer school, I had a teacher that didn't mind me drawing. So I ended up drawing in summer school. I just started making up this something from the name. I got inspired by the name Space Beaver. It had popped into my head because I like the animal, and I was too innocent to realize it was a euphemism for vaginas. But I didn't know. I was a good little Christian boy. And so I hadn't heard that term. I'd heard the cat term. I hadn't heard beaver. But so I was... And my favorite, two of my favorite comic books at the time were Rocket Raccoon with the Mike Mignola art, and really loved that, and Cat and Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew. Both those books really just did it for me. And so I just had also the idea of like just making up my own kind of crazy, funny animal character. But the twist on mine and the inspiration for it is like I have this very sixth sense of humor, you may have noticed. And one of the things I liked about Space Beaver was the idea that it was cute, like adorable animals, heavily armed. And, you know, but when they would shoot at each other, like blood and guts and bone would fly out, and, you know, they would, and then those, like, you know, like having a cartoon beaver, like really like crying out from his soul. I just think it's hilarious. And so it was meant to be funny, and I played it real straight, so nobody got the joke, and they thought, you know, so, but it got published. I ended up running into a guy that worked at my after school job. And he was a security guard there, and he was his name is Michio Okamura, and he actually went into being kind of a big shot in video game later. Very nice guy, and he was working on a manga book called Shuriken by a little small company I can call Viz.
Okay.
And I was and he was doing some inking and sketching in his sketchbook, and I happened to look over his shoulder, and it was because I was signing in. And it was great. It was such beautiful work. And I was like so excited. I started showing him what I was doing. And I was about 3-4 years younger than he was. He had like a wife and a kid in a house. He invited me over to his place and started showing me like the legit tools of making comic books. I saw a proper sized paper. I saw a crow quill pen, learned like how brush, you know, works. Even though I'd read about these things and how to draw comics the Marvel way, it was weird for me to see them in action. And then that sort of changed everything for me. But he was looking through my sketchbooks and all my ballpoint pen comics and was like, hey, I really like the Space Beaver thing. Like, where? And I was just making it up panel by panel. And he's like, I really think you got something. So he sent it into his publisher, and publisher said, hey, we'll print that as a backup feature in this other we're doing, but we can't pay him. We don't have any money to pay him. And, you know, I'm in high school living at home, so I'm like, I'm going to get published. You know, little kid who was stapling comic books to get, you know, paper to make comic books is like, I'm going to get that comic with my name on it. And I started going into this local shop that I had been attending, going to, and the owner was kind of a character. He had good intentions, I think, but he was like, hey, this is too good to be a backup feature. I'll put up the money. I'll publish you. He had never done anything before, and boy, it didn't show. But we had, but he ended up putting out 11 issues between the two of us. I wrote and drew everything. I had artist friends help me with the, like, some of the coloring on the covers. It was a black and white book, and I learned really fast as I was going, like, okay, ink wash doesn't well, but cross hatching does. And by issue 3, the book started to look a little better. But that's right when the entire black and white comic book imploded, black and white market imploded, because everybody was throwing money into it because they were looking for the next Ninja Turtle. And they thought that was going to be, you know, Space Beaver might be that as well as the few that did hit. But the truth was, it was like just overinflating the market, and it would be one, the first of many comic book market implosions I would live through in my career. But it was great because I was still in high school, and I was for the first issues. Like, everybody else was being told to, like, okay, we're going to work on this still life, or draw this, or trace your hand. And the teacher would come over and see what I was doing. He's like, you just keep doing that. And I'm like, okay. I got graded on the, like, some of the early work that is in Space Beaver number one. So, but I was figuring it out in real time, and sold it to my classmates is to make money to go to after I graduated. And, you know, I figured out, like, hey, if you build it, they will come. So it was very early on, and I started going to comic book conventions because I was 17 when Space Beaver came out.
Yeah,
and that was mid-80s, very different world. And but I started going to Comic-Cons. The Comic-Cons were very small events then, so if there were professionals there, it was very easy to go up and chat with them and get to know them. And I would take my work, and because I had a book, it would often give me a table. And so I would be a guest there, and being a guest is nice too, because then it gives you a little bit of legitimacy, even though I was a, you know, rookie.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I remember meeting Jim Lee back when he was working on Alpha Flight. And I remember saying to Jim, because I loved Alpha Flight. I was reading that. And also I'd seen the first Punisher Warzone stuff he had done with Carl Potts. And I remember telling him at that first meeting, I'm like, and you drew me a space beaver. I still have it. But I said, hey, you know, they put you on X-Men. Boy, right. So, you know, eye for talent. but that's how it all started. I started going to Comic Cons. I did about really hard work driving everywhere and drawing for nothing and just happy making money from my artwork. I always, whatever job I get, I take it because I started being paid to practice, you know, like if I could just somebody give me money to draw, great. If it didn't like it, I just thought I'll try to do better next time. And I'm still there. I'm still trying to do better next time.
So you have such a great, cool journey to hear about this of this process. Thanks. And you've worked on some iconic characters, like you mentioned Spider already. Yes. With Transmetropolitan, you know, your work with characters now with The Boys, people are, you know, mainstream.
Yeah, those are books that I co-created. For me, it's like when you said that, I was like, oh, I got to work on Wolverine and I wrote Batman, you know.
Yeah,
that's those, the co-creation. I'm very excited that those hit. I still am humbled by the success of both because they both went through some pretty rocky journeys. But
so what, talk about for you for you as a person, then as a creator, like you've co-created with some, like we said, iconic characters, you know. But take anyone from The Boys, take Spider Jerusalem from Transmetropolitan, you know, you even your character from, you know, characters from Happy, that was also a TV show for two seasons. Like what is it like as you as a creator of, how do you get into the process of trying to, you know, you obviously have writer's input, but how do you as a creator figure out like what do you want to a character that isn't a Wolverine, that isn't a Batman, how do you kind of get in the headspace to figure out how you want to create that person?
It really comes down to, I have a one side of me that has always loved comics is that even all the way back to seventh grade, I remember literally finding in a, like, I guess it got dropped in my in the gym changing room for PE, but so Gilbert, forgive me, I'm forgetting his last name. The Fabulous Furry, I think it's Gilbert Sheldon, but okay. It's the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, and it was from the era of underground comic. It was topics that I knew nothing about. I didn't really understand about, you know, smoking pot or any of that, but I love the artwork, and I love the fact that there was like cat as a joke, you know, because you never would see that in Archie, you know.
Yeah.
So I was like turned on by that stuff at a very young age as well, and then by the time I was 14, I fell in love more with fantasy paintings. I loved Frank Frazetta. I had Frank Frazetta posters and Boris Vallejo, fantasy, you know, muscle guys and scantily clad giant chested women and, you know, dinosaurs. And like, I love that. That stuff made me really happy too. At that time, I think also Conan the Barbarian with Schwarzenegger came out. So I had an attraction to that and heavy metal magazines. I discovered heavy metal. I used to sell those on newsstands and grocery stores, and I had to beg my father to let me get a copy because it was so overtly sexual. The cover that he was like, oh, I'm not going to buy you this, but I broke him down. I'm like, look at this artwork. And he was like, yeah, this is good artwork. So but Milo Manara was in there, and you know, people that really inspired me to think outside of the genre. And so when it came time to do superheroes, I was really happy that I got in and I did them, but especially with the fluctuations in the market, like I found myself kind of a wallflower at both of the big two, like where I'd done monthly books, but I wasn't getting monthly work anymore. And that's very nerve-wracking when you can't get monthly work. So I just was going to get out of comics entirely. This was when I was in my early 20s. But I'd worked with Warren Ellis on superhero books at a company called Ultraverse. And we did really like working with him, and I could see right away he was going to be in. His scripts were amazing, and details that he would put in there, I could be thought outside of the box. And so I told him then, like, hey, if you ever want to do a monthly book together, I'm interested. And came back around, not really sure if I was going to keep trying to get work at Marvel and DC. And he offered, he said, hey, I thought of this thing, Transmetropolitan. It's going to be for the new company, Helix, kind of like sci-fi, see Vertigo line. And I said, yeah, anything you want to do, I'm in. But then he told me the concept, thought, wow, that's great. at how the stories were going to be told, but my very first line of Spider Jerusalem, like, I nailed him in the morning. And what it was is, like, I was like saying earlier, I could channel my id. I was kind of a punk rock, roll that all into Spider. So to answer your question quickly, I create something that I enjoy. So
yeah,
if it's something that I get excited about, I've always been confident, and I say this to young people that are try to do this for a living, but if you're drawing something and you wouldn't bet, then why?
Mm.
And that's the biggest of it, is you got to have a passion for it on your own. If you don't,
yep,
it's going to show that you're not enjoying yourself. And if you're not having fun, your audience is having fun. So,
like you said, working on stuff is there something like that clicks for you when like you get to see stuff that you create? Like, obviously, like, as you have fans that have come to you at Comic Cons that are like talking about stuff that you've created that they really appreciate. I feel like there's a whole nother level though when it gets put out into the public eye, like a TV show or something like that. What is it like for you to see creations that you co-created, that you helped bring life to, that then people are being able to tell kind of their own interpretations, you know, like in a different medium?
Well, I mean, I've been fortunate that the adaptations have generally really good, but they haven't always included my participation, and sometimes my credit is missing from things. So that's not pleasant, because I had to learn the hard way. You got to fight for those things. But in the case of Boys, it's been very very great. Most people tell me how much they like the show, and that's so crazy. Like Dan Harmon, who created Rick and Morty, was like, and Community. Like, I met him at the Emmys. Like, oh, I love the Boys, and I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So it was, that's something else. But I don't know. It's I try not to let it get to me too much, because it comes and it goes, and there will be a day when I'll get the news that there will be no more Boys, and in maybe 10 years people still talk about it, or maybe they'll have forgotten about it. It's not it's dangerous to ride too long on one thing, because if your self-esteem is tied up in it and your creativity is tied up in it, it goes away when the thing goes away. And that to me is something I'm very conscious of. So I just try to very hard to enjoy it while it lasts. And I'm so happy and proud that the show is as good as last. Is so wonderful. I've gotten to be friendly with most of them. And, like, I run into Aaron Moriarty and Karen Fukuhara at conventions, and it's great seeing them. And then like, hey! it's very cool. So, but that's just people doing it. They're part of the job too. So I see them, and I see a lot of the people that really read their names, because it goes by fast at the end of an episode. And they work really hard, and I've gotten to know some of them as well. And it's brilliant to see all of that work come together, and and then see Homelander and people's memes. It's very strange.
I feel like it's got to be weird. He's like in like TikTok gifts, like where he's like yelling at Ashley. You're like,
yeah, he's out of my, it's out in the zeitgeist now. It's kind of the same way as Spider Jerusalem. I see Spider Jerusalem pop up in Strange. I'm like, it's bigger than me now, but my life, it's been really good the way that I am able to take these opportunities and turn them into new doors opening. Kind of excited. I'm writing more now. I'm being hired to consult on things rather than do the heavy lifting on everything myself. My expertise is called upon, and I'm really grateful for that, because it's nothing more than I tell somebody else what's wrong with their work. This is how you fix that. I'm out.
So good. Derek, I want to respect your time as a creator. I know you're busy and your hands are on everything. We've talked a lot of some of the stuff you've created. Space Bastards is another one that you actually recommended to me as we were emailing back and forth, which is another fantastic thing to see your art. I really wanted to know, you have such a unique art style. I know you had the early influences of like the comic strips and cartoon strips that you were said reading. Is there some artists though that really kind of inspired you of how you started to define what your style of art would be?
Yeah, so there's a long list. I mean, the earliest person that I really attached to was probably Adams and John Buscema. Mm. Their work really, and the Ramitas, both junior and senior. So like early on, it was mostly them. When I got to be more of a professional, I gravitated towards Frank Miller and more of the English style before he died. Steve Dillon told me I was an honorary Brit, and that really made me happy. He said, "You drink like us and you draw like us, you're an honorary Brit." And I'm like, "What can you do?" But Brian Bolland has always been my favorite artist, and I look up to him so much. I love like Adam Hughes and Kevin Maguire as well. Like, they inspire the acting in my characters, but Brian Bolland, the Camelot 3000, like, that to me has it all. It's a kind of a forgotten series, but I love it. And I love it because there's so excellent storytelling. And it was back at a time when Bolland wasn't fast enough to ink all the difference in his style, but it still comes through really strong.
Yeah.
And I liked his Judge Dredd work a lot. And I didn't realize they were the same person until later. And that really, because I was much younger. And so his stuff still inspires me. He could ink on a level that is supernatural. I mean, I own one of his originals. I'm looking at it right now. And I can't believe how clean and perfect it is. Like, he doesn't make mistakes. I'm sure he does. I can't see them.
Yeah.
And that's amazing to me. So, because I know from my own inking, which is just a bad attempt to be like, you know, Ballin or Dave Stevens, you know, like, those are the people that inspire me. But it's like, my inking is clunky, it's heavy handed, but it's me. And it's like everything else I was saying, I liked doing it and I wanted more control over my art. I was a penciler for years, then, you know, deadlines would happen and people would bring in other inkers in the middle of a job, so the style and the art would change mid-issue, or number three would be inked by one guy, number four would be inked by another guy, and like, some guys will go in and just change your pencils. And I had a style I was doing, do something different in the mid-90s, and an inker and it just completely reworked it so it didn't look anything like the other issues, and it looked not just annoying. Because, you know, that's one of those things. I didn't have any control over what the final product is, but then it lives in print forever. If the inking's bad, you get blamed. Like, they assume the pencils were bad if the inking's bad, you know. And I've worked with some great inkers, so I'm not sure all the inkers I've worked with. That's that, and by any means, it's just stylistic choice that doesn't match. And but that actually inspired me to realize guys that I really admire and love their work: David Mazzucchelli, Dave Stevens, Dave Gibbons, anybody named Dave.
It's Dave.
Brian Bolland, the Daves I know. But those guys will ink their own work. And I realized that that is essential, because then the final, what appears on the page at the end of the day, is you. And if it sucks at that point, that's on me. I can live with it. At least I know I gave it my best.
Yeah.
So So I really went on that, and it was a long time ago that I really kept insisting. About the time I got over number one with Greg Rucka, I was like, I really want to ink my own work, and I really pushed for it.
Yeah, I love how that process is. It's a learning process for you. Like, no, this is what I want to do. And this, I want to evolve as a creator, especially as you're attaching your name to.
And something. You got to fight for it. You'll get pigeon. They know you as a penciler, they will give you all the penciling work you can handle. But if you want to ink a pencil, they'll go, "Oh no, well, you can pencil too, pencil and ink you want, and we want books." So, you know, it's good problems for my pocketbook, but not great for me to grow as an artist. And so, when the boys came right after my Marvel stint, that was again a chance for me to go, "Hey, I'm going to ink my own work," and I really pushed for it then. And I'm actually working on a compilation of like an artist edition for Dynamite's going to put out. And that's a little bit of breaking news. Sorry. And going back through that and analyzing the fact that, oh, hey, well, this is what I was thinking and this is what I was learning, and it's weird. The problems with it in a way I couldn't then. But I realize it's almost 20 years ago, and you know, I've gotten to be a much better and use better tools now, and I'm starting to learn how to do it digitally on an iPad, and, you know, still growing and learning, and and I'm getting older, so my eyes are going and my back doesn't like sitting in my chair anymore. But,
well, Derek, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about comics with me. Is there anything that you got coming up that we haven't talked about that you'd love to hit on real quick?
Yes, and I can't tell you about any of it.
Perfect.
I can hint. I got some stuff coming up. There is something that is being announced. I wrote about to write the second one. I wrote a 96-page graphic novel for Crestar and the Night Stallion. That's K-N-I-G-H-T. Find their trailer on YouTube. It's very fun. The creators are great guys. We've gotten to be good friends, and they hired me to do a cover, and it turned into me taking on more and more supervising creative producer, and then in a 96-page graphic novel for them that other people drew, and that was really fun. And so that's coming out, I think, later this month, in February, or very soon. And so I'm working on that still. Got another graphic novel to write for them. I just sold a series. I can't go into detail, but okay. It's original. It's my own original story. First thing I think I've got put out there since Ripfire back in 1992. But a lot more creator-owned stuff is in my immediate future.
And excellent.
I'm still doing some jobs from DC are coming my way, but the creator-owned stuff is really seeming to find me now, and I'm grateful for it. So I'm going to be doing a lot more writing and drawing in the near future.
That's fantastic. And when that gets announced, I know I will be as excited. So I'll be shouting it from the rooftops as well. But where can people follow along with you? So when you have announcements and stuff that you talk about things.
I was neglected called DerekRobertson.com that I keep meaning to update, but I don't think it gets a lot of traffic. And even if it did, I probably wouldn't. But I am I'm on Twitter X. I like to call it Twitster now. I don't know why. But I'm still on there and mostly bitching about politics. But I'm also on Blue Sky. I'm a little friendlier over there because it's a smaller crowd. And now everybody can come join. So I'm guard Blue Sky. You can come on over and say hi to me there. And other than that, you can yell at me at conventions.
Perfect. So, well, Derek, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Like I said,
you too.
You've been created some of my favorite comics.
Thank you.
Right behind me on my shelf, and things that I'm looking forward to all of the stuff that you're creating. Gang, go support Derek when you hear these announcements. And with that being said, hopefully you can find some time to curl up, grab a book, and nerd out.
Yeah. Please keep reading comics. They need you.
Yes. Yes, they do.